justice triumphs. Police headquarters, Phoenix, Arizona.
Name, Joseph Cornell.
Age, 79 years.
Cause of death, bullet through heart.
Classification, murder.
Investigation, proceeding.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents another thrilling case based on the true justice stories followed by millions of readers each week in the New York Sunday News and its syndicate. Tonight's case, The Death Watch. Our story opens one afternoon at the railroad station in Phoenix, Arizona. As the 5 o'clock train pulls in, two men wearing dark blue suits and a prison collar swing off the train to the platform, elbow their way through the small crowd at the station, cross the street, and push through the swinging doors of a saloon.
Hey, Pete.
Yeah, Dawson.
There's George behind the bar now.
Yeah. Watch his face when he spots us here in his place.
Look, we won't say nothing. We just stand here at the end of the bar and order a drink.
Okay.
Hey, barkeep. Set us up a couple of straight ones down here.
Care for a taser or just... Well, Bobby, this is Dawson and Pete. Say, it's good to see you guys. Dawson, I see you still got that gold tooth in the front of your face.
Yeah, the boys in stir let me keep
it. When'd you get out?
Yesterday.
Huh?
Yeah, and we headed straight for Phoenix.
Well, I'm sure glad to see you.
We're looking for work, George. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
You got any ideas?
I don't know.
Oh, we'd be glad to cut you in on anything you shoved our way.
Sure, I know that. Tell you what, boys, let's sit over that back table there, huh?
Okay, come on, Pete.
Right. Jack, take over the bar for a while, will you? Go ahead, just sit down, Rich.
Thanks, George.
Well, George?
Now, look, Dawson, you know I'm straight.
Oh, sure, George. We ain't asking you to get your hands dirty.
Yeah, George, we're just looking for a job.
What do you say, George? Any ideas?
Well, there's a little deal I happen to know about. Might interest you boys.
Oh, let's hear it.
Well, this is the setup. A guy named Jim Cornell owns a citrus farm right outside Phoenix here.
Yeah?
Now, his old man's got the adjoining farm, see? Old Mr. Cornell's retired.
Go on.
I happen to know that old man Cornell's got about $4,000 in cash in his place.
$4,000 cash?
Hey, that's okay. Let's grab it.
Now, wait. It's not as easy as that, Alfie. Begin with, I know the money's hidden in the house someplace, but I don't know where.
All we got to do is stick a gun in the old man's ribs. He'll shell out the dough quick enough.
Sure.
Yeah, sure, but there's just one hitch to that.
Yeah, what is it?
But the old man and his wife aren't alone in the house. They are.
What do you mean?
Well, there's always friends and relatives hanging around their place. Or staying there with them.
It looks like your tips are dud, George. We can't pull a stick up with half the county looking on.
Now wait. I said there were people hanging around the place most of the time, but not all the time.
You got some ideas?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, let's have them.
Now, I happen to know that the son is looking for another hand on his place. I'll get you the job, Dawson.
Me? Work as a hired hand?
Dawson do real work?
That's a laugh.
Well, why not? It won't be for long. And it'll give you a chance to get to know the family. You'll be in a spot where you can watch the old folks on their place and find out when they're going to be along.
Yeah. Yeah, I could do that.
What do I do, George?
Well, I'd say you better lay low here with me while Dawson sizes up the situation. Well, how's it strike you?
It's okay. Okay, George.
Yeah, swell idea.
Yeah, $4,000 would set Pete and me up right. Okay, George, fix it up for me.
Sure, right away.
The sooner I start work, the better.
In a matter of hours, Harry Dawson, recently released from state's prison, is inducted into the routine of young Jim Cornell's flourishing fruit farm. In a matter of days, Dawson has ingratiated himself both with his employer and the old folks who live on the neighboring farm. He's quartered in a cabin in the fruit grove where he lives by himself. But all the time he's working, he watches and waits for the time when the elder Cornells will be alone. But the days slip into weeks, and always there are friends and relatives visiting at the popular old couple's home. Then, late one afternoon at the end of the month, as Dawson is cleaning up some tools in the shed, his employer stops to speak to him.
Oh, Dawson?
Yes, Mr. Cornell.
You know, I'm throwing a big barbecue supper down in the hollow this evening.
Oh, sure, Mr. Cornell.
You're going to come, aren't you? Help celebrate my daughter's 16th birthday?
Oh, yeah, sure. I'll be there.
Good. We're going to have quite a crowd. I've invited neighbors from all around. I just wish Mother and Dad could make it.
Oh, they won't be there?
No. No, Dad's not feeling so good today, so he and Mother aren't coming to the party.
Oh, that's too bad they can't make it. Well, some of the relatives will stay to keep them company, I suppose, huh?
Oh, not on your life. Everybody's coming to the barbecue, and that includes you, Dawson. So get your glad rags on and come along. Folks are already gathering at the hollow.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Cornell. I'll be there.
George's Bar and Grill.
Who is this?
Pete Bronson.
Pete, this is Dawson.
Dawson, may have heard from you for a couple of weeks.
Never mind. Listen to me, Pete.
Yeah?
This is it. Today.
You mean the old folks?
Hold it. Be careful what you say.
Okay.
I told you today's the day. We got a break. Now, you remember what you're supposed to do?
Yeah, sure. I ain't forgotten.
Okay, I'll meet you at the big tree like we planned. Hi, Dawson.
Sure took you long enough to get here. Move over, I'll take the wheel.
Okay. Got a bum shift. Be careful how you handle it.
Okay. Where'd you rent it?
One of the garages in town. See, how much farther up the road is this place?
About a mile. Now listen, Pete. You sure you got everything straight?
Sure. I go in and get the dough alone.
And don't forget, after you get the dough, you tie them both up so they can't get to the window and yell for help.
Yeah, I know. Look, Dawson. Wouldn't it be better to wait till after dark to do this?
No, they're alone in there now. The gang will be coming back from the barbecue when it gets dark. We do it now when there's nobody here to bother.
Okay, I guess you're right. We'll keep the motor running for a fast getaway.
Don't worry, I will. Then you can drop me off where you picked me up. You know, I got a barbecue supper waiting for me. Well, here you are.
The old Cornell place.
Right.
Okay. See you in a few minutes. Like $4,000.
I'll have the car turned around, ready to get out of here fast.
So long.
So long, Pete.
Come in. Joseph, don't you get up. I'll see who it is. Well, good evening, sir.
You Mrs. Cornell?
Yes.
Tell your husband to come in here.
Mr. Cornell isn't feeling so good. Maybe if you stop.
Tell him to come in here. I gotta see him.
Well, if it's really important. Joseph?
Yes?
There's a young man in the living room. He wants to see you.
All right, I'll be right in.
I don't believe I've seen you around this part of the country, young man.
No, you ain't.
I thought everybody around here was at the barbecue. You weren't expecting company.
I come for your money, Mr. Cornell.
You what?
You got $4,000 in cash in this house. I want it.
Joseph, he's got a gun.
Young man.
Are you going to give me the dough or do I have to get rough?
Oh, give it to him, Joseph.
Yes, yes, you can have it. Only I don't have it here. It's in another part of the house.
Hold it.
I was just going to get it for you.
Okay. You don't go nowhere without a mic behind you.
Better mind what he says, Joseph.
I'm waiting, young man.
Now, Mrs. Cornell, you sit in that chair.
This one?
Yeah, right there. Mm. I'll just tie this around your
hand. Oh, what are you doing to my wife?
Just tying her up.
Oh, no, please.
Shut up. That'll hold you. Open your mouth wide.
What are you doing?
That's a good girl. You take the being gagged like a fish takes the water.
You let my wife alone. Take that rag out of her mouth.
Get back, Pop.
I won't. You take
back
that rag out
Pop,
of here.
You'll get it, too.
I don't care what you do to me, but you're not going to... Help! Police! Help!
Everything okay, Pete?
Step on it, Dawson. Step on it.
Get the dough, Pete?
No.
You didn't.
You heard me.
Why didn't you throw a scare into the old man with your gun?
I did. I scared him too hard.
You mean you...
Yeah. I plugged him.
I followed the stupid trigger-happy stir-crazy.
Lay off, Dawson. You ain't got nothing to worry about. Nobody can connect you with it.
No. I ain't so sure about that.
What do you mean?
Well, I was waiting for you. A car pulled up to the other side of the road. Guy got out to look at his rear tire.
What, do you know if we're on here?
No, you dope. If it had been, do you think I'd have stuck around? No, the guy had an out-of-state license on his car.
Well, there. Everything's okay.
Okay. I didn't see you bring it back in his dough.
It was a bum break.
Yeah, I'll say.
But so what? There's plenty of places to pull jobs.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I'm getting out here. I've got to ease myself into that party down at the barbecue and act like I've been there all the time.
Say, that's a smart idea. You got brains.
I wish you had some.
Huh?
If we get out of this alive, it won't be your brains that did it.
Now, in this reenactment of an actual crime, the killer Pete makes all haste back to town into George's Bar and Grill. Dawson hurries through the fruit grove and a few minutes later slips quietly into the crowd at the gala barbecue. Meantime, back at the scene of the crime, elderly Mrs. Cornell, though dazed at the sudden turn of events that has resulted in the tragic death of her husband, somehow manages to struggle free of her bonds and remove the gag from her mouth. She stumbles to the telephone.
Police. Get the police.
And inside of 10 minutes, a homicide squad from police headquarters in Phoenix, headed by Lieutenant Hayes, is on the scene. The wheels of justice begin to turn. A short time later, Lieutenant Hayes steps out of the room where he's been closeted with Mrs. Cornell and reaches for the telephone in the hall.
Number, please.
Get me police headquarters.
Police department, Hanson speaking.
Hanson, this is Lieutenant Hayes. I have a description of the killer I got from Mrs. Cornell. Take it down, will you?
Yes, sir.
Age about 35, height about 6 foot, complexion light, eyes blue, hair sandy. He was wearing a blue serge suit.
I got it, Lieutenant.
Send out a 7th state alarm on him, Hanson. Get in touch with the state highway patrol. Tell them to keep their eyes open for a man of that description. Oh, and Hanson.
Yes, sir.
Send the details over to the radio station. Ask them to broadcast that description every half hour.
I'll get out of the media lane.
Thanks. Well, Sergeant.
Yes, Lieutenant.
Has the coroner taken the body out yet?
Yeah, he just drove away with it. Said to get the bullets extracted and down to ballistics tonight.
Oh, good.
The report should be on your desk within the next couple of hours, sir.
Yeah. Before I go back to town, Sergeant, we have a dirty job to do.
Yeah?
The sooner we get it over with, the quicker we'll run down the killer.
Well, what job's that, Lieutenant?
We gotta go down and break in on that barbecue party in the hollow.
Hey, that's right. Young Cornell doesn't know about his father yet.
Yeah. Now, come on, Sergeant. I sure hate to spoil their barbecue, but it's got to be done. Now, Sergeant, while I'm breaking the news to young Cornell, you take care of the crowd.
Yes.
Send the women and children home. Organize the men into a posse.
Right, Lieutenant.
Have them search the orange groves all around here. There's just a chance that the killer may be hiding out in one of them.
Well, we'll find him if he is.
You can report back to me at headquarters. Mr. Cornell.
Well, hello.
I'm Lieutenant Hayes from police headquarters, Mr. Cornell.
Sure, I know you. Glad you dropped in, Lieutenant. Always room for one more.
I'm here on business, Mr. Cornell. Would you mind stepping over here a minute?
Why, sure. Anything wrong?
Listen, everybody. Let me have your attention, please. I'm sorry, but we're going to have to interrupt your fun. The women and the children will have to leave.
Hey, what's going on here?
Mr. Cornell, I have bad news for you.
What's the matter?
I guess the kindest way is to tell you straight out. Your father's been killed.
Dad? Killed? How?
He was shot twice by an unknown assailant who entered his house. He was after that $4,000 your father kept there.
Dead. What about my mother?
She's all right now.
Well, thank heaven for that. I'll go to her right away.
Oh, just a minute, Mr. Cornell.
Yes?
I know this is tough on you, but if you could answer a few questions before you leave, it'd be a great help to us.
Oh, all right.
Now, can you tell me who else beside the immediate family knew about the money your father kept in the house?
That's hard to say. Dad may have mentioned it to any number of people. He trusted everybody. I may have even mentioned it myself. I always thought it was foolish of Dad to keep that much money around.
You were right. Tell me, who did you invite to this picnic today?
My neighbors, my employees.
Uh-huh. Did everybody come who was invited?
Yes, every single person, as far as I know.
I see.
None of them could have had anything to do with it.
Maybe not, but I believe that the killer had an accomplice. And it's my hunch that someone who knows you and your family is mixed up in this. And that's what I want to find out.
Following description of the killer has been given us by the police department, you are asked to be on the lookout for this man. He's about 6 feet.
Turn that thing off.
Hey, that's my description of broadcast.
Turn it off.
Okay. What's eating you?
Keep that radio off. customers down the bar will hear it. And why is there somebody up here?
Okay, George.
Another thing. When are you getting out of here?
Hey, what's the matter with you?
Look, I just want you to get out, Pete.
Look, you know I gotta hide out up here till the heat's off. That was the plan.
Sure, but the plan didn't include a murder. I don't want no part of it now.
No?
No.
Well, you got a part of it, whether you like it or not.
What do you mean?
George, after a guy kills once, the next time it's easy. You get me?
Yeah. I get you, Pete. But
well, just remember it. And I'm sticking up here till it's safe for me to leave. And I'll clear out of this part of the country so fast you'll have to look twice to see me.
Police headquarters, Lieutenant Hayes.
Lieutenant, this is Sergeant Garfield. We just finished going through the orchards out here. There's no sign of the killer.
I see. Well, it's past midnight now. You can let the men go home now, Sergeant.
Right, sir.
Oh, I'd like to have you come back here, though.
Yeah? What's up, Lieutenant? Did you get a lead from the ballistic report?
No, just that the bullets were fired from a .32. But you and I have a job to do here in town tonight.
What's that?
Well, I figure the killer can't have got very far away. All the highways and roads out of here have been on strict patrol since a half hour after the killing, and the state police have been alerted.
Yes, I know.
Well, I think that if the killer was trying to get out of this vicinity, he'd have been picked up by now.
You figure he's hiding out in town someplace, huh?
I think so. I'll meet you on the corner of 5th Street and Arizona Avenue in 1 hour.
5th and Arizona, right?
Right. You and I will cover all the dives in this town personally. Now, in their search for the killer, the two police officers look in at every bar, scan the customers in every pool room and shooting gallery. But by the time they reach the section of the city near the railroad station, the shutters on George's Bar and Grill are drawn, for the first gray streaks of morning light are appearing in the sky. Tired, disgruntled, and half convinced that the killer has slipped out of the city and through the police net, they call it a night and return to headquarters. An hour later, out at the Elder Cornell farmhouse, Dawson steps up to the front door.
Oh, good morning, Dawson.
I just come over from your place, Mr. Cornell. I thought I'd stop by and see how things are going for you here.
Thanks, Dawson. That's kind of you.
Have the police found the killer yet?
I don't think so. I've heard nothing yet.
That's too bad. I hope they get the guy.
Yes. I'd like to get my hands on the man myself.
Sure, I understand. Your mother up yet?
Yes, she's in the kitchen. I don't think she got any sleep either.
I'd like to speak to her if I could. Tell her I'm sorry for what happened.
Sure, go ahead. And it's very thoughtful of you, Dawson. Very thoughtful.
Thanks, Mr. Cornell. I am real sorry.
What is it, Hanson?
Lieutenant Hayes. There's a fellow out here who wants to talk to you. Says he's got some information about the Cornell murder.
Send him in.
Yes, sir.
That'll be the 14th guy who's been in this morning with what he thought was information, Lieutenant.
Yeah, I know. It's always a way in a case like this. A lot of people, mostly crackpots, want to get their names in the paper.
Yeah.
Sometimes they really think they know something. But once in a great while, one of them does have some information. Oh, come in, sir.
You the officer who's handling the murder case?
That's right. What's your name, please?
Carl Weber.
All right, Mr. Weber. Now, suppose you tell us what you know.
Well, I heard over the radio and I read in the paper about that old man who was murdered.
Yes, yes. You know anything about it?
Well, I don't know whether this means anything or not, but I was passing that very farmhouse about the time it happened.
You were, huh?
Yes. I was on my way into Phoenix, and, well, I thought I had a flat, so I pulled up for a minute on the side of the road near that farmhouse.
Did you see anything or hear anything?
No, not in the house, but there was a man parked right across the road where I stopped. And his engine was running. I figured he was waiting for somebody.
Hey, maybe we're getting somewhere, Lieutenant.
Tell me, Mr. Weber, did the man you saw in the car answer the description of the killer?
Well, no, he didn't.
Did you recognize the man in the car?
No, sir, but I'm not from around here. I'm from out of the state.
Well, do you remember what he looked like?
Now, when I got out to see if my tire was going flat, I naturally glanced across at him.
Yes, yes, of course. Go on.
Well, he kind of opened his mouth as if he was going to say something, and I noticed he had a big gold tooth right in front.
A gold tooth?
That is something.
Oh, yes. Not many folks have gold teeth in the front of their mouths anymore.
Oh, you're right, Mr. Weber. Anything else?
Why, no, that's All right, yes.
Well, thank you for the information.
Oh, that's okay.
I'll leave your name and address at the desk, will you, please?
Oh, sure, sure. I hope I've been of some help.
Oh, you have, Mr. Weber. You certainly have.
Well, that tip supports your theory, Lieutenant, about the killer having an accomplice.
Yes, it does. I believe that the party with the gold tooth is somebody who knows the Cornell family.
How do you figure that?
Sergeant, the timing of this crime was no coincidence. It was planned to take place when the old couple would be alone.
Sure. And no one but a friend or acquaintance of the family could have known exactly when the old folks were going to be alone.
Correct.
What's our next move, Lieutenant?
Let's go out to the Cornells again. I'll drop you off at the son's farm, and you see what you can find out there. I'll go on down to the mother's place.
Okay, Lieutenant.
If we can find someone who knows a man with a gold tooth in the front of his mouth, we'll be set.
If I know anyone who has a gold tooth in the front of his mouth.
Yes, Mrs. Cornell, do you?
No, Lieutenant. None of my friends has a gold tooth. At least, not where it shows.
I see. Well, perhaps an acquaintance, then.
Oh, I don't recall anybody.
Well, it's very important, Mrs. Cornell. Please try to remember. You see, we know that this man was waiting in a car outside your home here yesterday at the time of the tragedy.
And you think I know that man?
Well, I hope so. At least I'm certain that he knew about you.
A man with a gold tooth. Dear, dear, it does seem as if I have seen someone.
Yes?
I just can't think who. It wasn't one of my close friends, though. I know that right off.
Well, perhaps an acquaintance of your husband.
No.
May I answer that for you, Mrs. Cornell?
Oh, if you would, officer.
All right.
Just say I'm rescued.
Right. Hello?
Hello, let me talk to... Oh, Lieutenant, I was calling you.
Yes, Sergeant.
Young Cornell's got a hired hand with a gold tooth in front. His name is Dawson.
Hang on to him, Sergeant. I'll be right over.
Oh, wait a minute, sir. I can't hang on to him. He isn't here.
Where is he?
Well, he must have seen me coming and got scared. Anyway, he's gone. We searched all over for him. His quarters, the shed...
Sergeant, put Mr. Cornell on the phone.
Yes, sir. Mr. Cornell. Hello?
Mr. Cornell, my sergeant says your man Dawson has gotten away.
Look, Lieutenant, I'm sure you're after the wrong man.
He has a gold tooth in the front of his mouth, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Well, do you know anyone else who has?
No, I don't. But Dawson couldn't have had anything to do with the killing. He was at the barbecue. I saw him.
Now, Mr. Cornell, tell me this. Where do you think he is right now?
Why, I don't know. He's usually...
You haven't any idea where he might have skipped to?
No, not the slightest.
I see. What agency did you hire Dawson from?
None. He was recommended to me.
By whom?
Oh, a fellow who runs a bar near the railroad station. I stop in there occasionally for a glass of beer when I'm shipping out fruit. It's called George's Bar and Grill.
Thank you, Mr. Cornell. Tell the sergeant I'll pick him up at once. We're going down to have a talk with George. Shortwave on, Sergeant?
Yes, sir. All set to go. Here's the mic.
Thanks. Lieutenant Hayes to cars 39 and 14. Lieutenant Hayes to cars 39 and 14. Attention.
Car 39 reporting. Car 14 reporting.
Cars 14 and 39, proceed to George's Bar and Grill opposite the railroad station. Believe Cornell killer and accomplice may be hiding out there. Caution, these men are probably armed. Hold action if possible until I get there. That's all.
Just a few minutes before the police get orders to close in on the hunted man, a tense and hectic scene takes place in the hideaway above the saloon. Panting, out of breath from haste and fear, Dawson bursts into the room.
George, where's Spot? What's the matter?
Yeah, what's up, Dawson?
I think the police are onto something. I saw an officer come into young Cornell's place, and then the two of them headed for my shack.
What the devil?
I lit out and hitched a ride into town on a fast truck.
Hey, you boys better get out of here.
Shut up, George. You know the cops are watching every road out of this town for me.
Well, I'm getting out.
Wait a minute, Dawson. You're not leaving me here to take the rap alone.
Pete, put that gun back in your pocket. And listen to me, both of you.
Yeah, talk fast, George.
But there's only one way you might be able to sneak through. It's on a fast freight. What time is it now?
Almost 3:00.
Good. The freight goes through here at 3:07.
You're telling the truth, George.
Oh, help me. You fellas better try to get on it. It's your only chance.
We'll make it. Come on, Pete. Let's travel.
Right with you.
Good luck, boys.
How do we get out of here?
This way through the back door. We can sneak between the buildings.
Stop where you are, you two.
What?
Stop or we shoot.
They got us, Pete.
Not me. No cop has taken me.
Stop shooting, Sergeant. You got the blonde haired guy in the shoulder.
Hey, what's going on in my place?
You'll find out. Sergeant, put the cuffs on all three of these.
Oh, wait.
Hey, you got nothing on me.
We're booking all three of you on suspicion of murder. What happens to you from here on is up to the courts of justice.
Close questioning of Pete Dawson and George the saloon keeper by the prosecuting attorney brought to light the details of the crime as they've been reenacted tonight. The courts of justice found George not guilty of participation in the crime of murder. But justice found Pete and Harry Dawson guilty of murder in the first degree. Their sentence, death in the gas chamber for the wanton killing of Joseph Cornell. Now in police headquarters in Phoenix, Arizona.
Sergeant.
Yes, Lieutenant?
Take the card on Joseph Cornell from the active file and mark it case closed.
Justice triumphs. Although the names of all persons, characters, and places are entirely fictitious, and any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental, this dramatization was based on an actual murder case. Next week at this same time, the Mutual Broadcasting System will present Poison for Profit, story of a murder ring which treated human life as a commodity to be bought and sold. Another dramatization taken from the files of two justice stories appearing each week in the New York Sunday News and its syndicate. These programs are produced and directed by Jock McGregor, and the stories are dramatized by Bart Conry. The narrator is George Carson Putnam. Dawson was played by Carl Emery, Lieutenant Hayes by Ralph Camargo. Others in the cast were George Petrie as Pete, Elizabeth Morgan as Mrs. Cornell, Humphrey Davis as Mr. Cornell and George, Don Douglas as the youngest Cornell and Hanson, and Ed Latimer as the sergeant. The orchestra, under the direction of Emerson Buckley, played music especially written for this broadcast by Richard DuPage. Frank McCarthy speaking. This program came from New York. For another exciting drama, stay tuned now for Scotland Yard, starring Basil Rathbone as Inspector Byrd. You'll hear The Case of the Trojan Horse in just a moment. This is the world's largest network, the Mutual Broadcasting System.